Hello, this is Peter Jones, and I'm sitting here with John Bradley, osteopath at Clayton Le Moore's practice, who's also a good friend of mine. John is a bit of a pioneer today because he's going to be doing the first ever podcast that's been broadcast on Equid Community News website. So,
oh, Peter, you never told me it was the first one.
Welcome, John.
Thank you, Peter. I'm glad to be here.
Right. First of all, let's start from the very beginning, which is where you were born. What about your childhood? Tell me about your childhood.
Well, I was actually born in Blackburn on Selborne Street in Witten, but I was the sixth child, and my own dad quickly moved because I think the house wasn't big enough, so we moved soon after. I think I was one at the time when we moved to Rishton. So really, I can't remember living in Blackburn, and all my formative years were in Rishton and being brought up there, really. And that's where I went to school, to primary school, and then I lived there while I went to secondary school at St Augustine's. So that was my upbringing, really.
So what are your earliest memories as a child?
Well, I've got lots of memories, really, but it was, as you can imagine, a pretty hectic household with six children.
Yeah,
my sister, who's the eldest of the family, was 10 years older than me, so there wasn't a lot of... You know, 10 years between six children, it was fairly manic at times, let's say.
And imagine she'd get the job as babysitter later on, would she?
Well, I think she did, because if you think when I was probably getting to six, she was 16, so I think that gave me mum and dad maybe a little bit more freedom. Mm. But no, it was a happy childhood, actually. I had lots of friends in Rishton and, you know, school friends, and we played out in the big park, because it's funny going back now and it looks... kind of quarter of the size of what it was. Endless summers that seem to be sunny, unlike the ones we're getting at the moment. It was a happy childhood, really.
And I mean, you're quite a tall guy, aren't you? So were you big as a child as well?
Yeah, I was always tall, really. Yeah. I was always the tallest in the class. Went to St. Charles Primary School. And if you look at the pictures for the first Hall of Communion, I'm the beanpole at the back. And I always stood out, really.
So nobody bullied you then?
Oh no, I wasn't. I might have been tall, but I was a bit soft, really. Yeah, but no, I suppose nobody did bully me. No.
So what sort of prowess did you have at sports? Were you good at sports, and what did you like doing best?
I enjoyed sports, and I always played in the school team at primary school and secondary school. I was a goalkeeper, hence being tall. So football was my real passion, but over my school years, I tried at old sports, because at St Augustine's it was a very good sports school, really. So I did all the athletics and shot put and javelin. I played volleyball for the school team, I'd have got everything, really, but it was always coming back to football. That was my passion, really.
And it still is, but we'll come on to that.
Well, it is.
Later.
It still is, but
also, what were your best subjects at school, and what did you not like?
Well, I suppose we've got to go to secondary school for that, because primary school, I can't really remember the subjects that well. But at secondary school, I suppose my favourites was the sciences, really. So chemistry, biology, maths, I was quite strong at. So I think if you're quite good at a subject, you enjoy it. Quite like geography. So when I went to do A levels, I did pick geography and chemistry and biology. That's the A levels I did. Mm. So the subjects I didn't like really was languages. It was never a strong point. And the funny thing is, my children now, I don't try and push them, but they've all the boys. I've got three boys and one girl. The boys have really struggled with languages. So there must be something genetic there, I think.
yeah, but you've obviously got this scientific bent, and that obviously eventually translated into the job you're doing now.
Yeah, it's just a good job I'm doing in England, not in France, because nobody would understand the word I was saying.
There you go. But even so, I mean, we'll get onto this a little bit more later on, but you've got to know a bit of Latin, haven't you, to be an osteopath?
Yeah, you've got to learn that. That's just parrot learning, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I suppose it is.
I think with languages, you got to have your brain's got to be wired up slightly differently to excel at languages.
I suppose it's a bit like when I used to learn the piano, I used to have to learn all the Latin phrases, and it's a similar thing. You learn all the... You just get used to using...
Yeah, repetition, isn't it?
Yeah. So you got plenty of friends at school, and you enjoyed your school life, so you were a happy kid. You had five siblings. You got on with all of them, I presume?
There were times.
Yeah, well, I mean, there always... There's always times.
Yeah, as a youngster we got on, and generally now we still do. But yeah, it was a happy childhood, really.
Right, well, we'll go on to talk a little bit more about leaving... Well, going to university and stuff later on, but you went to St. Conductions, you went to secondary school, and... I'm assuming you went... I think you went to St Mary's College, didn't you?
I did. I went to St Mary's College sixth form. So yeah. After me... Well, they were all levels then. What are GCSEs now? I ended up going to St Mary's College for 2 years to do my A-levels.
Right. Well, as I say, we'll talk a bit more about what happened at college and how you got to where you are now a little bit later. But I think it's time for your first piece of music. And I noticed that you picked a glam rock thing here, Blockbuster by The Sweet...
Yeah,
and you made a note about being 9 or 10 years old when you first heard this. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was I was nine or ten. The reason I picked this, when you asked me to do this and I had to pick five songs, do you pick five songs that are your favourite songs of all time, or songs that mean something in a juncture in your life? And that's, I've decided to go for the second thing, which is picking songs that may not be in my top 10 or even top 100, but
they meant something,
something at the time.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the first one is Blockbuster, and the reason is it was my first single that I bought. Now, I was the youngest of six children, and my siblings were very much into music. My sisters were into David Bowie, and my brother was into Pink Floyd, and I kind of was brought up with music around me. But the first single that I actually bought was Blockbuster by The Sweet, and it just sticks in my mind that... That was the start of building up a record collection.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you a little bit more in a minute, but first of all, let's hear Blockbuster by The Sweet.
What to do? Does anyone know the way? There's got to be a way to Blockbuster.
Right. Well, that was Blockbuster by the Sweet. Takes me back to when I was in my 20s and very much a glam rock fan at that time. So we're back here with John Bradley. And before we went to that break, we were talking about when you were at St. Mary's College in Blackburn. Can you tell me a bit more about your time there, what you studied?
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time there because you get a bit more freedom at sixth form after secondary school. And quite a lot of my mates who I was at secondary school with went there. And I also, it was nice because my best mate, and still is my best mate, didn't go to the same secondary school, but we rejoined at St. Mary's. So it was nice to get back to, you know, seeing him on a regular basis. So yeah, I had a great time. I studied chemistry, biology, and geography, and general studies you had to take. And yeah, it was a whole new experience for me, really. I decided to do the sciences because that was my kind of slam to my favourite. At that time, I had no idea what profession or what job I wanted to go into. That came really after probably the first 12 months at St. Mary's when it was my mother mentioned osteopathy. At the time, I was applying through UCAS to do psychology degree in London. And my mother mentioned osteopathy. And my sister, who was 2 years older than me, was doing physiotherapy at the London Hospital. So I thought I'd investigate because I'd never heard of osteopathy, didn't know what it entailed. And so I rang up a local osteopath because I don't know. It's funny you do these things when you're younger. I can't imagine my children at 16, 17 taking it on themselves to ring somebody up to go and find out about it. But that's what I did, just by chance. David Guttridge in Blackburn said, yeah, fine, come along, come after surgery. So I went one Thursday evening after surgery, and he explained what you had to do to become an osteopath, there's different colleges you could go to. And then I went back the week after, and he got a colleague and showed me the techniques that they do. And I went back the week after and saw him treating patients. So I kind of built up this kind of, you know, interest in it, really, and ended up applying. And that's how it came about, really.
Yeah, so it was a good fit right from the start. You knew as soon as you started doing that.
I think what swung it for me, because still, actually, at that time, you didn't have to apply through UCAS to the osteopathy college. It was separate. So I still applied for psychology and got a place in London. But I also went to interviews at three different colleges. One was in Kent and two in London, and got places there. So the crux of the matter came when I had to decide which profession which I was doing. And I think what swayed it for me was I watched David work. I knew it was one-to-one with patients. I knew what I was going to be studying, I'd be using purely afterwards. Whereas you do a degree in psychology, not many psychology graduates then work in psychology. There's only a small percentage do. They may go on to other jobs. But I had this in my head that if I'm spending 4 years studying something, you know, I'd spent the previous 8 years or even longer at school studying stuff that maybe I wouldn't use again. I certainly wanted to use the stuff I was learning at degree level, you know, the 4 years of all that knowledge, you want to use it.
Absolutely, yeah. And you've not regretted it since, have you?
Oh, no, it's strange how these things happen because, as I say, I was totally oblivious to osteopathy until my mother mentioned it. So, really, it was my mum who I've got to thank for that, really, for bringing it to my consciousness, really.
Excellent. Now, we're talking about a period when you're 16 to 18 years old and a healthy lad. So, obviously, girls would be coming into the equation and partying and music. Tell me a bit more about that side.
Well, music, obviously, this is all about music in a way. Really, from the age of probably 14, 15, the police came on the scene. And they were the... I didn't get arrested. it was the band, the police. Now, for some reason, me and my mates really got into them, and that was our band. I think everybody has a band when in those formative years, and ours was the police. So we went to see them in concert. I remember when I was at sixth form, they played at Leeds Hall in Leeds, and we went along. I think I'd just recovered from glandular fever, and I must have been 17, and we went to watch the police there. Sting, you know, a very young Sting, compared obviously like we all are now, but it was early days of the police. And they've always been, a strong band in my psyche, really. Because I had all the albums, the five albums that they made. So yeah, so my next song is going to be a Police song.
Yeah, and of course Sting has gone on to bigger and better things on his own since, hasn't he?
Well, he has. He's I don't know about better, but certainly he's had a long career.
Yeah.
And
but they were a very iconic group, weren't they, at that time?
Oh, they were, because I did when they reformed a few years ago. Well, probably 10 years ago, I did go and watch them again, and it wasn't quite the same, but it was still good. Mm.
Well, before we go to that piece of music, just tell me a little bit more about you. I mean, were you a party animal? Did you like going out partying?
No, I wasn't really a party animal. Well, I think when you were at St. Mary's College at sixth form, you kind of introduced to going around Blackburn. You got the same kind of
route. Bobby Coast it used to be, didn't it?
You start off at the Brewers, and then you go to the White Horse, and then you go to, you know, there's a certain set route. Then you end up at Peppermint Place that was the Cavendish.
Oh, I remember that.
So they always used to be college dues every couple of months. So I wouldn't say I was a party animal, but I quite like going out and socialising.
And wasn't it about this time that you met your good wife? We'll talk a bit more about it later, but...
Yeah, it was probably around that time. I think I was in lower sixth that I met Claire. And yeah, so that's when all that started as well.
And what college was she at the time?
She was at the one in Accrington that isn't called that anymore, the convent. What was...
Paddock House?
Paddock House,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. Oh,
wow. So she went to Paddock House.
Right. I remember that well. My first girlfriend went to Paddock House, but we'll not talk too much about that at the moment. right, so yes, that brings us nicely to your next piece of music. And quickly we go to Every Breath You Take by The Police.
Every breath you take, and every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you.
We're back here with John, and that last song was Every Breath You Take by The Police. We're going to talk a little bit more about leaving college and what happened with Claire. I think we had a happy ending there as well, didn't we?
Well, yeah, because as I say, I met Claire when I was in sixth form, and then she actually went down to London before I did to do nursing. She went to Westminster Hospital, which actually doesn't stand there anymore. I think it's Chelsea and Westminster. They built a brand new hospital a few years ago. But she did a training at Westminster Hospital. So she was down there a year before me. And that wasn't the reason I did osteopathy in London. But lots of people thought it was. But, so when I finished at St. Mary's, I went down to London. And that was a hectic day, actually, because I actually had my driving test for the first time on the day my mum and dad were driving me down to London to start, my training in osteopathy. I failed it. But so it wasn't
fair,
a great...
To be fair, there weren't all that many choices, were there, for what you wanted to do college-wise?
Oh, no. There was only two colleges in London and one in Kent, so I had to go south. There was no... But I suppose, I could have gone to Kent. But London was... The British School of Osteopathy, where I went, was the biggest of the three. It was probably about four times as big, a lot more intake, a lot more going on, really. So that led me down to London. So we drove down to London that day after failing my test, knowing that I had to retake it when I came home for Christmas. And it all started then, really. And obviously, it's all a little bit too... it wasn't too bad because my sister was down there. So, and Claire was down there. So I had people I knew.
Oh, that's good.
And it's slightly different to university. Two of my kids have gone to university. And it's great now. You've got halls of residence. Whereas, because it was so small college, you had to organise your own accommodation. So you didn't have that, maybe meeting people as easy. You know, you met them on the course, but I did make some very good friends there that I'm still friends with now. But it maybe took a little bit longer. You weren't chucked together in a halls of residence.
No, that's great though. And as you say, you had your sister and you had Claire down there. So, you know, you didn't feel lonely or isolated. And
no.
And did the romance blossom while you were down there?
Yeah. So, yeah, it did. We'd been going out for probably a year or even 18 months before then. So, the romance blossomed, as you put it. And actually, Claire, I had 4 years study down there. And for my final year, Claire had moved back up here because she started a midwifery course at Blackburn. So... You know, we did have times apart, which sometimes you need just to make sure it is the right decision.
Mm.
So the year before, I had a year down there, which probably got me more studying while she was up here. And then we came back up north. And we actually, it was a crazy week. I kind of graduated on the Friday. We had an actual graduation ceremony in London on the Tuesday. So I had to go back down to London for the day. Claire came with me and my dad. My mum wasn't well enough to come. So we went down for the day. And then the day after was my first day's work as an osteopath in Bury. I used to work in Bury for 2 years, for a couple of days a week. And then the following Saturday, 3 days later, we got married.
Oh, wow.
So it was a busy week that week.
You just qualified and you got married. That's good. Yeah,
yeah, it was literally married within a week.
And you'd obviously known quite each other quite a while by then. So like you say... You knew it was the right thing to do, and times proved it right. We'll talk a bit more about your family, which all of them I probably met at some stage here because they have helped you out, and we'll just talk a bit more about that and how they're going on. But a little bit more about your next choice of music, which is A Groovy Kind of Love, not the classic version that I know from the Mindbenders, but the copy by Phil Collins, but I'll let you off with that.
Well, I put Phil Collins down, but actually that's the one I knew because, again, Genesis and Phil Collins, I was brought up on that. So I picked this song, really, not for who sang it, but for the song what it was. It's our first dance at the wedding. Now, at our wedding, we had Frank Flynn and his band, and so it wasn't even the Phil Collins version, it was a Frank Flynn version. he sang it and his wife played the guitar. So I picked Groovy Kind of Love because it was first dance.
Well, that's great. And we're going to listen to it now. Okay, that was Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins. I'm back here with John Bradley, and we were talking about you getting married just after you'd qualified, and what a busy week that was.
Yeah.
You settled down where?
Well, just before we got married, we bought where we sat now in the, at Clayton the Moors in the surgery. We bought this house, and we need to rewire, replumb, and a lot of work needed doing leading up to my graduation. So I used to come home at weekends, and just to keep costs down, I'd help the electrician like by chiseling out the back for the plugs and all this sort of thing. So when we first got married, it wasn't ready. So we lived with Claire's mum and dad for maybe 2-3 months. I think it was the October of 89, we moved in here and started married life here. So where we sat now, which is the treatment room, was actually the lounge. The treatment room was in the front room. And the waiting room was just in the hallway. So we lived here for approximately, I'd say, about 3 or 4 years, because we had a first child probably after 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Joe, who's my eldest, he was one when we moved out. So we lived here as a family for probably a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just when he got mobile, he was a bit of a late walker, but once he got mobile, it was time to move, really. It wasn't conducive to work and home life.
No.
It served its purpose at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was quite easy commute just down the stairs. But, after Joe was a bit more vocal, it was time to move out.
But they are quite big houses, these, for anybody who can't actually see this. It's quite a big house in Clayton-le-Moors, and they are you know, they've got, I mean, I know they haven't got a lot of rooms, but the rooms they have are quite sizey, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very nice rooms. Yeah. The lovely features with the plaster and everything. So it served its purpose, and that's when really this just became the clinic. We moved to Great Harwood and started family life there, really. Mm-hmm. But it was great that we could do that. And one time it was great when I was fast asleep in bed and the doorbell went and it was my first patient of the day. So that only happened once, yeah. But that was a bit of a sleeping time.
I understand. Yeah, so then you moved to Great Harwood, which is bigger property, presumably.
Yeah, it was, again, similar kind of era that it was built, you know, big rooms. Mm-hmm. It was a semi in Great Harwood on Park Lane, and we were kind of lived there for the next 14, 15 years.
And by that time, you'd had how many children? And
well, when we eventually left Great Harwood, we got four children. So we had three children very quickly, within 22 months of each other. And then James, the youngest, came along about 4 years later, after the third child. So we, at that point, we had to extend it. We did a loft conversion and made another bedroom. So it was big enough. And then we decided it's time to move again. And that's when we moved to Wiltshire, where we are now.
So you have three sons and a daughter, haven't you?
Three sons and a daughter, yeah.
Yeah. And they've all helped you here at one stage or another.
They've all worked here, yeah. In fact, James, the youngest, works here at the moment. He's just doing his GCSEs as we speak. Well, I don't think he's got one today. It's his final week. He's looking forward to Friday when he's finished. But he works here normally on a Friday afternoon after school for about 3 hours. He'll cover in reception. And they've all had turns at doing that, which has been good for them because they've learned how to talk to people, how to answer the phone, deal with money, deal with appointments. It's a whole thing they've got to embrace.
And I have to say, I mean, all the time I've been seeing you as a patient, I've met all four of them and they're all really well mannered, lovely kids, and that's a credit to you as well.
Well, Peter, it's nice you should say that. Yeah. And I like to think it was the way I brought them up, but it's probably nothing to do with that.
And they're doing okay, well, educationally, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, they're all doing well. They're all following the different pathways, really. Mm-hmm. Joe, the eldest, did architecture. He's done his degree in architecture, so he's working at Masonry Design in Blackburn, doing drawings for stonework. He's quite happy with that. Alice has just got a new job 4 months ago. She's at the neurology department at Preston. Like a trainee physiologist, which is her passion really. And then Will, he's in Manchester at the moment. He's doing an apprenticeship, accountancy apprenticeship, with the civil service. Oh. So
they've all got quite a diverse.
I just texted him today. Actually, he's got his final exams in a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and they've completed 2 years. So yeah, they're all diverse, totally different jobs really.
And now you've moved to the posh area of Blackburn, haven't you, Wiltshire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't know what's hit it.
No. Is it a big house?
Yeah, again, it's a semi, but similar era to, you know, big rooms. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, big rooms and loads of space. So, yeah, it's good. I'm ready for downsizing now, though, but they don't seem to be moving out that quick.
Oh, I see. No hints dropped or anything.
Lots of hints on a regular basis. In fact, daily.
Well, you're in a lovely part of the world, actually, there, because it's not far off Ribchester, is it? And Ribble Valley. It's beautiful.
Oh yeah, we're just off Ribchester Road, and it is beautiful because I started cycling a couple of years ago. Me and Clive bought bikes, and our normal route is to drop down Ribchester Road, down to Ribchester, and up Gallows Lane to Hurst Green. If we've got, you know, an hour to spare, we'll just do a bit of a loop to Mitton and Worley and back up. So, in fact, since I got the bikes, I've discovered the Ribble Valley and Trofaborland more than I ever did before. Yes, you know,
that's where when I was 17, I think, on my 17th birthday, I actually went down to Ribchester, and it was all day of a job, and I loved it because when you go through, like you said, Hurst Green, we went the other way, I went through Hurst Green, and going down the dip into Ribchester, I think I must have been doing about 50 miles an hour on that old bike of mine, and I'm so glad I didn't hit any obstacles, but it was really exhilarating, I have to say.
I bet you didn't have a helmet on either, did you?
I didn't. No, nobody
they didn't did have helmets those days, didn't they?
That's it, that's true. But yeah, so it's a beautiful place to live. Now, before we introduce your next piece of music, I think there's something that you want to tell me about your father, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Well, the next piece of music is kind of linked to him in a way. My father, he was a quiet kind of man. He didn't give much away. I suppose having six kids, he couldn't get a word in. And he kind of looked after my mum for quite a lot of years because she had poor health. And then she passed away and he probably had, oh, I forget now, probably about 6-7 years on his own. And it was really this piece of music. It reminds me of that time because my brothers and sisters used to kind of take him out. And I remember taking him to the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester. Now, this is one of my favourite pieces of music. It wasn't particularly his favourite piece. He did like it. He was more into Rimsky-Korsakov and Sherazad, which I've been to see him, with him as well. But we did go to the Bridgewater Hall to see the Moscow Radio Orchestra, and they played Rachmaninoff Symphony Piano Concerto Number 2, which is a beautiful piece of music. So it's just me and my dad off to Manchester. It's just a happy memory, really.
So that's what we're going to listen to next, then, Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto Number 2. Right, well, that was a little bit of a slower pace with Rachmaninoff, and beautiful, I think everyone will agree. Back with John now, since you became an osteopath and you establish yourself in Clayton and you also have a practice in Lytham. So can you tell us a bit about both those practices and...
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose if I've not established myself now, I never would, because it's actually 27 years this year that I've been in practice. And as I said before, I graduated and got married, so I can always remember my wedding anniversary, so that's quite handy. So it'll be 27 years this July since I actually qualified. And yeah, I've got to be really happy how it's gone, really, because over those years, it's just the practice has just built and built. And I enjoy my job, really. I enjoy meeting people. And they come, obviously, they come here with a lot of pain. That's what they come with. So it's great if I can get involved with that and reduce the pain and make their life a bit more bearable, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, one of the times I came to you, I could hardly dress myself. I fell on my shoulder. And I left here being able to raise my arms above my head. And you know, I'll never forget that. And I thought, well, that's brilliant. And it must give you some sense of fulfilment when people are grateful because, you know, you change their lives, really, don't you?
Yeah, well, we try our best, really. And it is a great job to do because at the end of the day, you're making people... Don't get me wrong, it doesn't work all the time. But I would say in majority of cases, we get a good end result. In some cases, we do have to refer back to the GP. But it's knowing when to do that. Sometimes the people I don't get right, but I then send to the GP and they find there's something else out, I just get as much, you know, pleasure with that because I have actually made, you know, they're still going to hopefully get sorted in the end. Doesn't need to be me doing the stuff. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great job to be able to do. And
I suppose there's lots of techniques you can try for different types of patients as well.
Yeah, the techniques really haven't changed over the years, but obviously I think what does change is your skill at them, really, and your palpation. So over the years, osteopathy really is a lot about 90% of my patients are spinal problems, really. So it's neck, low back, short, mid-back problems. And a lot of it comes down to what I feel. I look at them standing, I look at them moving. That gives me an idea of where the problem areas are. But until I put my hands on, I'm not going to get any feedback. And that tells me what the problem is or gives me an idea of where it is. So a lot of osteopathy is down really to palpation rather than anything else. And that is something that you can build and build and build over the years.
And I suppose in a way you can tell what people's lifestyles are in that, if they're uptight, if they're stressed, you'll feel that, won't you?
Oh yeah, that's very easy to feel with people who've got stressed and people who are depressed and that. The tissues have a certain feel to them, really. Certainly a stressed person, the upper trapezius going up into the neck are rock solid. Now, there can be other reasons for that. You can have a whiplash injury, but that's why you take a full case history and then examine them standing, moving, and you build up a picture of that person and what makes that person tick and what maybe impacts and traumas that body has had. And it's only when you're understanding that person can you then deal with it. Because I'm a great believer that osteopathy is successful because it does treat everybody slightly differently. I can't say from one day to the next I'm giving the same treatment because you've got to treat what you find. It's not a prescriptive treatment where people come in, I've got low back pain, or I'll give you this treatment, this, this, this. It doesn't do that. It treats individually, really.
So, I mean, let's say you've been doing this job for 27 years. There must be moments that stand out for you, though, like your proudest moment, something that you achieved that really... You think, oh, God, that was great. That's what I'm in this job for.
Well, thankfully, there's quite a lot of those moments, really. On a weekly basis, I get a lot of pleasure from people getting better. But as I said before, I wouldn't say this was a great one, but I was pleased. There was a chap came in and his symptoms weren't quite, I wasn't happy with. I took the reflexes and I examined his certain other neurological tests you can do. And I wasn't happy, and I sent him away. I really thought there was something neurologically going on, and he'd been having problems for 6 months, and nothing had been sorted by his GP or whatever. And I sent a letter with him back to his doctor, and he was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, but I knew there was something not quite right there. And as I say, I didn't end up treating him, but at least got him the right treatment at that point. And that's as pleasing as somebody, a builder walking in who can't work, because he's done his backing and he's doubled over and you manipulate him and he walks out straight. Now that does happen, and when that happens, that's a great feeling as well.
I'm sure, yeah.
So both are totally different, but for different reasons, they're pleasurable.
So in other words, what you're telling me is that you really do enjoy your job.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's good. That's great. So, well, just before we actually wind this up, let's talk about John Bradley now and what he does to relax.
Well, I think I mentioned before, the last 2 years I've started cycling. In fact, Tuesday, 2 days ago, me, Claire and six friends, we did the Ribble Valley 60, which was we've done for the last 3 years, 60 miles up to Malham Tarn and round. So I do enjoy cycling on a Sunday morning. I'm not saying I do it every Sunday. We do a few in the midweek, but Sunday morning is brilliant. I'm sure there's lots of motorists out there who won't agree. All these cyclists on the road, jamming the roads up. But I'm quite passionate about that the last couple of years. Enjoy football. I've got a season ticket, I'm afraid to say, at Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, Blackburn Rovers,
and
yeah.
I've had for, 20 odd years.
What do you think about the new manager?
Well, everybody's got up in arms about it, but I think, we're not really, beggars can't be choosers, really.
Well, I was talking to a Burnley fan who's actually my window cleaner, and he says, give the guy a chance.
I think he'll be a good manager. Yeah. I think he'll be as good as anything we've had in the last 4 years.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate that he left that season. He was at Burnley, he left to go to Bolton. And by doing that, Burnley went down by one goal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so he's not really liked at Burnley anymore.
He's not really popular at Burnley, but hopefully.
But I think you've got to say he did well for Burnley. He's not had success anywhere else since. But like most things in life, if you can take experience from your failures, you can maybe kick on and improve.
He has actually got somebody up from the Championship to the Premiership. So
yeah, exactly. I'm not anticipating Blackman will be going up to the Premiership.
not yet.
This side of Christmas.
They need some players, don't they? Okay, and also music. What's your music taste these days?
I've got a real mixture of music. We'd listened to earlier the classical stuff. I don't listen to as much classical as maybe I used to. I very much like. I went to see Coldplay last week at the Etihad. They're one of my favourite bands. Noel Gallagher, High Flying Birds, I saw him fairly recently. And I'm seeing him again at Lytham Proms in August. So I've got a kind of, favourites really. Mm-hmm. The Police we've mentioned. But of current bands really, I'd say Coldplay, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Noel Gallagher. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that, really.
Excellent. And do you get time to read at all?
I do read a bit, yeah. I'm a slow reader, but I do read.
Fiction or fact?
A mixture, really. I'm just reading a book now. It's like a thriller. Can't remember the name of it, actually. But I've read some autobiographies. Sam Allardyce's autobiography was quite interesting. Because I think it's great when somebody brings an autobiography out. You get all the... You can remember the days when he was doing what he was doing because you were there watching it, but you don't know the insider details. Then you read his autobiography years later and you see how it was panning out, really.
It's clearer what went on. You're reading and films. Do you like films?
Yeah, I do watch. I don't watch as many films as I'd like to, really. It's still a hectic life. Yeah. I lead with work and children, and even though they're grown up. I just watched Castaway, actually, which was interesting, because is a bit like Desert Island Discs, isn't it? With Tom Hanks, and that's a great film. I just watched that recently, and that's an old film. So there's not many bad Tom Hanks films, and there's not many bad Steven Spielberg films. And when they come together, it's quite a... Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. Schindler's List was a great film. So, yeah, there's some great films out there.
Right, just a couple of things before you go. First of all, what advice would you give to anybody who wants to explore a career in osteopathy?
Well, from my own experience, all I can say is if you the kind of person like I am, you can enjoy it. If you like meeting people and if you like helping people, then maybe it's a thing to do. And go for it, really. Go and see an osteopath work, find out if it is for you first. And yeah, it's a great career to do.
And now, as I say, you've got four children, all grown up now, more or less. And you've been married 25 years, have you? Something
27.
Like 27 years.
27 next month.
And I believe there's a landmark coming up in October for you as well, isn't there?
There is a landmark. Thanks for pointing that out, Peter. Yeah.
You're welcome.
It is half a century.
Oh, well done.
So I'll be 50 in October. And so I'm off to Vegas. There's 15 of us going off to Vegas. So you may never see me again.
Yeah, well, just go easy on the betting. Mind you. So it's been a pleasure interviewing you today, John, and thank you very much. And hopefully I'll be seeing you for a long time to come, but not too often.
Not too often, no.
Okay, thank you. The last piece of music, I nearly forgot this. The last piece of music you chose.
Yeah, the last piece of music, really. I was umming and ahhing, because I've just mentioned all those great bands that I like, and I can't believe I'm not going to pick an Oasis song, because they're one of my favourite bands. But I'm actually going to pick Imagine from John Lennon, because I think it's the lyrics, it's poetic. And I think especially in this day and age, and the problems that we're having at the moment in the world with terrorism, I think John Lennon's song Imagine spells it all out, really.
It was ahead of his time, wasn't it?
It was ahead of his time. And yeah. I know in years gone by we've had, you know, religious rifts and problems in Northern Ireland, problem with the Crusades if you go back far enough, and obviously we've got problems now with religion. And I think John Lennon's Imagine, if everybody listened to that, and then that would sort the world out, really.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and that's what we'll listen to now. Thank you again, John Bradley.
Thank you.
Say